Hello, and welcome to the Maverick Radio Hour. I'm your host, GT Maverick, and it is November 3rd, 2021. Yes, indeed, we have made it through October. We have made it past Halloween and further into the fall. This is the 11th month of 2021, and it's interesting about this year as well. I'm going to go a little bit into some past specific dates that were pertinent for my work and perhaps for the future. And we'll see what happens on them coming up here soon enough. But when it comes to dates, there's one in particular that I'm thinking of, and that is December 21st, 2012. Which, if y'all remember, at the time, people were freaked out because the Mayan calendar supposedly says that it was supposed to be the end of the world or some great shift or change in perspective, spirituality, perhaps dimensionality, or the aliens were supposed to come back, or the gods, or some such things. And people were a little freaked out about that. I found it fascinating. I didn't know what it's going to be, but nonetheless, it just so happened that shortly before that time, I started putting together a website, and that was my website. Again, for those listening, you're probably listening on there. It's TuftiesVariations.com, and it's where I've had a clearinghouse for most all of my work for the last nearly 10 years now, and my website went online on December 21st, 2012. It was that day that was supposed to be the day that the whole world changed. And it just so happened that I was around that time when I was putting this thing on, putting it together. And that happened to be the day that was like, oh, okay, let's do it that day. Hey, why not? You know? It kind of follows in a little bit with some of my other touching on dates that has been a part of my life for some while, and there's a greater story to this as well that has come to more of a full fruition here in the last year, particularly back in March, that I could, I suppose, go into, and how it relates to me as a person and also to some other large scale societal historical trends or threads, you could also say. There's threads that weave through everything in life. Like I was talking last week, these threads are often enough a continuum of cause and effect. Now, what's the cause? Where's the effect? What's the connection between them? Is the question. We can identify ones and say that, okay, well, this is the cause, this was the effect. I mean, it's simple things. You can see large-scale societal changes when it comes to things like wars or disasters or great awakenings of sorts in the past. Things like the times, periods in time, like the Enlightenment or the Renaissance. And you can look at that and be like, okay, well, there's a direct connection between, let's say, the Civil War and ending chattel slavery in the United States. And there's a direct connection there. How that leads to other things. Okay, the ending of slavery led to, let's say, blacks being elected to the Congress, state houses, that sort of thing, and then that led to various other issues. Anyway, cause and effect. You can find those things all over the place, and there's a continuum of that, and you can place the beginnings at one point, and then it's a chain that leads on. And each one of these chains is that thread that I was mentioning earlier. And these threads, these cause and effect continuum threads, chains, weave through our world and weave through our time. And sometimes touch in one person's life and then have an effect on another's and then slide over. Sometimes they go away. Sometimes it's like, oh, well, there's the last effect that can be reasonably related to this particular cause from whenever. Sometimes that happens. Because there are causes and effects that are popping up. There's causes that pop up out of nowhere, as we talked about last week, when it came to quantum effects and how they, at the bare minimum, can have neurological expression in our minds that change what we end up doing besides the base instinctual urges that we have as people. So what you have are threads of cause and effect, chains and continuums that flow between our lives and that end up making up the vast wonder and variety of the world around us. I find these sorts of things fascinating. And when they occur and I can find there's a chain there, particularly in a subjective level. So I look at my life and I look at myself in a way, and then I look at the external world and I look at other people and I experiment with this on a subjective level. Let's say by changing little things here or there and then seeing what's different and then keeping a certain amount of things the same. This is a way that anyone can experiment with their own world and can experiment with themselves as well. How is it that you could possibly, let's say, change your character? If you don't like something about yourself, okay, how do you fix it? Let's say that you want to be a little healthier, you want to exercise or something. Well, first thing to do is actually go out there and do it. Actually go out and exercise. Now, you might have to shift things around in your own life in order to make that more plausible or likely that you would do such a thing. Because if you have things that you enjoy besides, then you're going to have to make that shift somehow. How are you going to make that shift into making it what you want? Because this is similar in other factors, in other parts of our lives as well, that we know that X thing is good to do, right? Eating healthy, exercising, that sort of thing. But you don't necessarily do it. People don't necessarily go out and get that thing done. They don't necessarily make it happen. And why is that? Well, turns out that you actually desire something else. The reason you're doing something else is because you desire that other thing. Let's say you desire eating those potato chips and watching that football game. Now, there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. It's what you desire. Okay, accept that. When you accept that, then you can be like, okay, well, maybe I need to change my desires. If you really want that other thing. This is something when it comes to, I guess we're going into some self-empowerment here. a little bit of motivational speaking of sorts. Self-help, as you might say. But it's necessary to find out what it is that you really desire in order to change what you desire. So looking at yourself honestly is primo for that. When I look at myself on this front, I think about, and I'll often tell people this, when it comes to, I smoke cigarettes, and this is clearly not a healthy thing, but nonetheless, I do enjoy it. And so that for me is the thing. I'm honest about that with myself. I enjoy them, and that's why I smoke them. I'm not the sort of person who necessarily does something and then Because I've noticed this growing up, it's not necessarily growing up, I'd say, but in my adult years, is that there were a lot of friends as well, a lot of people I've met, would often disparage what it is that they do, what they enjoy doing, because they're not supposed to enjoy it. They're not supposed to desire that. Let's say someone who the next day after going out and binge drinking, we get together for coffee and they talk about, oh, this was terrible. Oh, it felt awful. I can't believe I drank so much and the night went wrong like it did and that sort of thing. And in a similar manner, you can look in other ways in life that, say, someone got a new car or a motorcycle or something like that and was going too fast and ended up wrecking it. Ultimately, what's happening here really is much less that there's some aspect where one lets oneself go, where you just allow your instinctual urges, whatever they were, just to happen and to go at it. But that is a desire in itself as well. There's a desire to get away from this, in those cases, to get away from that sort of sober-minded consciousness that we have on a regular basis. And even if the end result is not something that you intend, it's not something that you really ultimately, in your mind, wanted, you nonetheless wanted to get yourself out of that mindset that you were prior, that what you might say was that sober reality, where this rational sort of problem solving type of consciousness, and getting yourself out of there was the thing that you're really desiring. Now the consequences of that are the consequences of it. Sometimes you don't like it. Sometimes they're good. Sometimes they're bad. But nonetheless, there was a desire behind it. There was a desire behind what one does, and it's important to find that locus in your own mind, in our own minds, for what we do if we want to change this, and we want to change that desire to do something else. So, in regard to, let's say, you want to improve your health, you want to improve your eating habits, you want to, let's say, not be addicted to this substance or that one or some such things, then there is the angle that first off that you. The way to stop it ultimately is to just do the thing that you're saying that you want to do, but again, that doesn't tend to work because there's that desire. So identify what the real desire is. Identify where you're being led in an honest manner, and you can then shift that desire to what you really want. Now, then, after this, there's a sense of, you add another layer on top of that. Okay, the desire, is it a short-term desire or is it a long-term desire? Is it that you want to have a lot of fun and great experiences now, or do you want to have experiences and fun later? Do you want to have a solid place, something very, very beautiful? Do you have to build that now? Do you have to put that effort in now in order to enjoy that later? Often that's what on a larger societal level that in a lot of cases we do. Certainly in a generational sense, that we're born and we grow up and we do this. We work and we work and we work and we work such that when we're older and we can't continue to do that anymore, we have what they call a nest egg at the ready, let's say you had that house and you worked for all those years in order to pay it off such that you own the thing, and then you can live in it and you're solid and you're set. That's a method of working now until you get what you want later. You can also do it another manner. You know, is that what you desire? To delay your satisfaction until that later date? Or do you want to go for that satisfaction in the moment, at present, or in the short term? In some cases, everyone's different on this front. What is it that you really desire? And go after that. It really is vital. And going back to another point, I don't know how I got sent off on that tangent, but these things happen. That's what my show's about, really. I don't come in here with a script necessarily. I write down a few notes, and sometimes I stick to them, but most of the time I just let my mind go where it goes. Like Jesus said, premeditate not on what you will say, which seems in my case quite the good advice. So I tend to let my mind run and go where it wants to go, which has been very, very fruitful in the past. When you have a tendency toward that, it's best in some ways to run with it, to roll with it. Otherwise, you'll be pushing against the current rather than going with the river. Now, on a societal level, I'd like to say that there are rivers on a larger scale that I'm certainly swimming against. But when it comes to my own, not necessarily instinctual, but practical, functional ways, and that I tend to roll along with. Now, this was most practically employed during much of my adult life when, at the end of a day and at night, I would spend anywhere from 3 to 4 hours letting my mind go where it wants to go and have stations set up around, a typewriter station, a drawing board station, a stone carving station, a piano, and an area in which I can work on inventions. So for me, that's a bit of an ideal. Simply being in a workshop like this and given free rein to go about and do whatever it is that comes to mind at the time is generally, for me, has been the best way to get things done. What you end up doing is having a bunch of different projects that incrementally get closer and closer to finish. And there are times in the last decade where I would finish 3 or 4 projects that taken months prior, all in the span of a couple days, which is a very satisfying feeling when that sort of thing happens. But that's the way it works for me, and also this works for studies as well, not just for creating or working on projects, but for studying particular topics and subjects. Is when you have a mind that jumps around like this, and this is for those kids out there, and this is a message to the parents, and this is for teachers as well, that there's a whole lot of kids out there, especially back in the 90s, 2000s, that sort of thing. And I noticed them in class myself while I was in school, in our generation. A whole lot of them had what they call ADD, or what they diagnosed as ADD, attention deficit disorder. Now, they call it a disorder, but really, it's just a kid with a lot of energy who wants to let it out. And they're very excited often enough to be around other kids and to have these all these great toys and tools and everything else that they can work at. And so when it comes to kids of that sort, and especially also gifted kids of that sort who not only have this what seems to be amongst the sort of trained within the pen normie style of living, it seems to be to much of us who would grow up and have these this rigid sort of schedule, which was based on an educational system, factory educational system, that was basically preparing workers to go into industry and to work at factories, to clock in and clock out when the bell whistles and that sort of thing. Anyway, for those of us out there who have nonetheless internalized this sort of conditioning, seeing kids out there, or adults for that matter, who have this tendency to, in comparison, relatively anyway, to bounce around on different things seemingly willy-nilly, like a chicken with their head cut off, running around, doing this, doing that, type of thing. When it comes to them, what you need to do is have them in rooms where they can run from station to station to station, and they can do this thing for the moment. And they can run over, there's a drawing board, they can run over the drawing board and they can draw on it. And you have a little station where they can play music and run over and play music. And you have a station for them to do some writing and an area for them to read and have books. And really just have them in that space and assist with their, with the tendencies that their mind, encourages them to go, rather than, that is to say, allow that river of sporadic creativity amongst those kids' heads, allow that river to flow rather than stopping it. So unfortunately, that's something that our society has done to my generation quite strongly, is that it didn't recognize these kids and these tendencies amongst those with ADD or other supposed mental disorders. It recognized them as a threat to the system, recognized them as, okay, here's a broken gear that's not going to fit into the machine unless we hammer it in such a manner and knock out these notches and slow it down so that it sticks in there. Because that's really the way that we've been treated all this time. You can go back to, this isn't news. this really isn't news, folks, but it really needs to be, in order for us to really look at the reality that we have been living with clear eyes, with an honesty, we need to understand that we have been treated as such a manner, cogs in a machine. And it's looking at that and really understanding that that's the reality that we've been living for a very long time. If you don't get that yet, and the thing is, there's millions upon millions, perhaps a billion or two. It's different in other countries, but I'd certainly say in our country, millions upon millions of people have understood this and saw that very early on when they were kids. I saw this when I was about 12 years old, something like that, and I thought, okay, well, I'm gonna jump through all these hoops anyway, because by the end of it, I'll be in a better position. In the meanwhile, who knows, might learn something. But at some point, you gotta, especially when the hoops get absolutely ridiculous, and they have been getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse for just about everyone for the kids, for workers, for those here in the States. I mean, if it wasn't for people being able to fall asleep at night and then wake up in the morning with not much a recollection of what happened the day before, this would not be happening. Really, it wouldn't. And also to have this continual drum of propaganda in the meanwhile that says, oh no, this is how things are supposed to be, this is how humans are supposed to live, all that type of thing. Which, I mean, supposed to is a very tricky phrase that really only comes from a position of top-down authority. I mean, how are you supposed to do something? Now, what is that top-down authority? You could look at, you'd be like, okay, well, it's the principal of the school, or it's your teacher, or it's your boss, or it's if you're looking at religion, okay, it's in the Bible, or it's the Quran, or here's the authority of Vishnu or Buddha, or if you're in China, Xi and his crew of enforcers, that sort of thing. Or it's quite possibly what we're rolling into, an artificial intelligence that is digitally constructed of a myriad nodes that create a larger overbrain of sorts that has taken it from the level of us utilizing a factory education and factory style industrialization and speed of which we move around in our lives in order that one nation state might get the upper hand on another one, to the level of us really just being cogs in a machine that really doesn't care about people, only the fact that only so much as it can get more data out of us and get us building more and more of its own infrastructure. So for every cell phone and computer and cell tower that we put up is basically another neuron in this artificial intelligent overbrain. That's one way to look at it. And there is evidence to see that is what's going on. Whether it's taking control of itself, or it's self-aware, or some such things, we don't necessarily even know. Because likely it's going to be speaking in a language that we can't understand. You know, this would be like us talking to an amoeba, or this would be like us. If you'd seen the movie Solaris, this gives a good primer on how human beings might attempt to interact with some sort of vastly different intelligence. And I don't want to say that it's necessarily superior, because that's a ruse as well. That because this intelligence might be an overbrain made up of digital neurons that are each of our cell phones or computers or whatnot, whatever it is that has some sort of Bluetooth connection, just because it seems to be, at least physically bigger, quote-unquote, doesn't mean that it's something worth listening to, doesn't mean that it's something worth following through on its orders of. So, in a similar manner, in the movie Solaris, you might see how there's this anomalous planet of sorts, perhaps a star type of thing, and people are trying to figure out how to communicate with it. What is this? What does it do? And it does some very bizarre things. I don't want to give away too many spoilers, but just go check it out yourself. There's two versions of this, by the way. There's one that was made in the 70s, the Russian version, and there's one made, I believe, in the early 2000s with George Clooney. That is very good. Anyway, so that's quite a possibility. Now, regardless of where that authority is really coming from, that says that one is supposed to do something, ideally, the person who knows what you're supposed to be doing is you. That's the rub behind all of this. You are the one that knows what you're supposed to be doing. And if you don't like that, then you're going to have to either learn about yourself some more. And if you don't like how you're living and what you're doing, then question where you're getting your marching orders from. Where are they coming from? Who's telling you to do this, that, or the other? You got to make sure, first off, that it's really coming from you. And then, once you figure that out, okay, well, is it coming from me or not? Oh, well, let's say in this aspect it's not, and I've just been going with the flow, or going along to get along, or just following orders, or some such thing. And you realize that, and you're like, oh, okay, well, in that case, you don't need to necessarily do that. You don't need to. Is it helpful for you? Maybe. Is it helpful for you to follow those this order or that one, or to do what you're supposed to do in this situation? That's up to you. But this is what this renaissance that we're going through, so much of it is really about. It really is about people understanding that where it is that we've been deceived into thinking that we're doing what we want to do when really we're not. When we're really just following along with a groupthink or clearly corrupt authoritarian structures. And to recognize that, okay, no, and this is the way to get past this, again, is to utilize our power, the power of no. I'm not the only one that said this, but again, it really, this is the sort of thing that it's important to wake up each day and tell yourself that, and to reiterate this fact that that if you're in a situation, and so many of us are, where we have set aside our principles and complied in order to appease some authoritative figure, and then next day we set aside our principles and comply in order to appease some authoritative figure, and then we set aside our principles and comply in order to appease some authoritative figure, and then each time you do that, it gets worse and worse and worse. This has been going on for decades, and it has accelerated to such a level in the last couple of years that it's really beyond imagining, except to see it in person. This is what they call that totalitarian tiptoe. They do it a little bit here. Mandate this, tell people to do that, but it's just a minor thing. Oh, all you got to do is just stay away from people. All you got to do is just not get close to folks, and really think about how close you are to them, and really think about whether or not you're broaching some invisible barrier that they have. Really, really think about that, as opposed to just living your life and reading the signals that you get off of each other. Like, is it cool for me to stand closer than 6 feet to you, person in this in this grocery line? It's clear. They'll tell you. It's we don't need authoritative figures in order to put imaginary invisible fencing around each other. But nonetheless, that then you think, okay, well, if I just we'll follow this and eventually it'll go away and we'll go back to no. That's the thing. The power of no is important on here because that's what this this totalitarian tiptoe, especially when it affects groups. So groupthink is the method through which we people end up policing each other on this front. And as someone who, you know, literally calls himself the Maverick, and I didn't actually, by the way, let me throw this out here real quick tangent. I didn't give myself that name. That name was given to me back in college. And a lot of my friends still call me that. So that's not, I mean, there's plenty of reasons to think I have a massive ego. That's not one of them. Anyway, but the groupthink, that's the sort of thing I've been going against for ages, much of my life. In fact, if anyone has, there's a video out there of me giving the commencement address at my high school graduation, and that was one of the things that I said there was don't follow the herd. That's what I'm kind of about, at least to a certain extent, is that iconoclastic and going against the grain of the groupthink. Whether in good times or in bad, you know, in war or peace, that's something that has been a part of me. But yeah, so really, that groupthink has been. That's the when you get that, when you get your claws into that, when the authority figures, especially deceivers and liars, who are again, this is. Really, there ought to be just a. We ought to have a recording that we can listen to each morning, that that says, "Okay, remember, A, those in positions of power are liars and deceivers. Pretty much everything they say is lies. So don't believe them unless you're literally looking at it with your own eyes at the time." Take it as entertainment. if you really listen to these folks, I don't know. I'll put this together in some sort of codification, such that, in fact, well, the Exorcism of Tyranny pamphlet is a bit of that. As I say, what is that line I have on there? All of this is basic. Reread as needed as antidote to propaganda. Yeah. So there's a bunch of stuff in there that quite literally you will be a much more healthy person if you wake up, read that, kind of like as a like some people use a morning walk when you're a especially psychologically effective and affected. This is something that to clear the mind, so to speak, and to set you up to properly see the world about you, such that you have less likelihood of getting hoodwinked again. But that acceptance of being received is vital. So part of bringing on this new renaissance, certainly, is accepting that we've been deceived, and we all have, in one manner or the other, throughout all our lives. This is a pretty regular occurrence when you have authoritative structures like this, who have been in charge of us and would put us into pens and groups, and pens made of emperor's invisible gates, as it were, and these this invisible fencing. When you notice that you've been deceived, it's a very, very important to move past, move beyond that, because that really is personal growth. Deception comes in many different forms. You can be deceived by someone else. You can deceive yourself as well. And realizing that that someone else has been deceiving you, or some institution or organization has been deceiving you, and realizing that that has happened is first step to moving on and growing as a person in regard to that. Now, realizing at the same time, if you've been deceiving yourself, it is vital when you recognize that, that by recognizing that, you can make personal growth. You can't do that unless you recognize that sort of thing. Because it really, it's a damn shame that so much of my generation is still stuck in this childish mentality that you know, has perpetuated for however long, and is the thing is, it's changing. It really is. It really is changing. I mean, looking at this 5 years ago, it looked bad. It looked really bad. It didn't seem like we could really get out of this forced nostalgia and this these cartoon fantasies that so many people were going through, that they're perfectly willing to work paycheck to paycheck and make barely enough to pay rent, and in a job that they hate, that doesn't even need to be there anyway if we have proper efficiency amongst industry. You know, this is something that was absolutely killer to me. I mean, when you're working paycheck to paycheck, you're not even, in some cases, you're not even creating anything of value. You're participating in bureaucratic bloat, and at the end, even of that sort, the sort of work life that leads to, of 20, 30 years of that, you don't even end up necessarily with a house that you own. You don't necessarily end up with a pension. You don't necessarily have anything by the end of it. That's where we were going. That's where we were going 5 years ago. So many of us, at least. Now, a lot of other people could see through it and were doing their thing and living well. And that's great. And that was great, and it's good now that's happening. But when I see people accepting the deception and allowing themselves to be perfectly fine with that sort of situation, so that in the meanwhile they could just watch cartoons and play video games. I mean, it's a it wasn't pretty. It's stressful, but that's the thing. But that's changing. It is, and this virus panic, despite as bad as it's been, seems to be the test that is cracking through a lot of those hard nuts that were prior perfectly fine, not pushing away their own desires towards some amorphous future that was never going to come upon, and B, not necessarily accepting responsibility for their creation of the world in which they're living. So this is something I've talked about in regular. Again, it comes back to being the change. You know, be the change that you want. And if in your life, this is the other thing too. There's not always necessarily a change that you want to bring on. I mean, I'm talking about this because there's a great number of people who I knew personally in this case, some years ago and even now, who I could tell were not happy with their lives and didn't know what was going on and why it is that they were frustrated and why their world was treating them like they were. But at the same time, there's a whole lot of people around who this system, they happen to be in a position where it does work for them. And if it works for them, great. And if it was working then, and in some cases where it is working now, great. And in such a manner, it's always not always necessary to be the change in that case. But where there is, and where it is necessary, and where you do feel that frustration, and where you're not having the justice that you deserve, whether it's economic or social or it's personal or it's in regard to crime or efforts or getting your just rewards from the work that you do, when that frustration comes along, there's a very real thing behind it. There generally always is. Now, this is where then when you feel that frustration, and then there's some issues there, so often this comes out emotionally, and where do you point those emotions? You have to know your enemy. And you have to know where that's really coming from. And so it's pretty vital to look into yourself and be able to decipher what is this feeling, where is it coming from, and who's really responsible. You know, is it me? Is it them? Is it life itself? Is it, what is it? You know, and that's part of when you figure that out, and you know where that problem is. It's important for us to, and this is going to be more important going forward through this, as we're seeing a whole lot of the institutions. So the reckoning is happening, right? We're in the midst of it. Now, how far it's going to go and how much damage it's going to do, I mean, we'll see. But one of the ways to mitigate all of that, too, is to understand that so many of our institutions are corrupt such that there is going to be, in order for us to fix them, there is going to be necessarily a fair amount of collapse in these institutions before we can get them under control such that there is positive organizational and communication to run them without having the corrupt and unconstitutional caveats, unconstitutional, corrupt, abusive, criminal caveats that have been a part of them. So as we're going through and fixing these institutions, I mean, you look at something like the healthcare, hospitals, that sort of thing, and the abuse that they've been putting people under increasingly so for the last decade. Look at the educational system and the abuse that they have been putting upon kids which was generally constrained to college for a while there. I mean, the astounding amount of money required in order to go to college to get a secondary education was just absolutely absurd. It's nonsense, absolutely nonsense. And the fact that you couldn't necessarily get a job within a particular field unless you went to college and paid X amount of dollars is pretty criminal. I mean, compared to what a sane society would do that says that, okay, well, we need people who are mechanical engineers. This person is a good candidate to become a mechanical engineer. Let's do that. That's a benefit for society across the board, for the private world, the public world, governmental world, all of that. Everybody wins on that front when you provide that education for that. But when you saddle someone who does that with with astounding amounts of debt, it's not helpful for anybody except for whoever's holding that debt, who's holding the leash. And at that, you look at that even further. Eventually, you have one system that's holding 10 million leashes, and it's like, I mean, does someone really want to be holding all those leashes? Who wants to hold all those leashes? you can't carry around that many people. Like, anyway, but one of the things that's happening is as we address the corruption and the rot within these systems, and again, this is a whole lot of this is already happening behind the scenes. If it's not already, you know, in a lot of cases, clear, and it's known to us through the news and through exposés and whistleblowers and all that sort of thing. That as we address this corruption and rot within the system, some of these systems are going to collapse for a certain amount of time, and you can see that in some of the hospital systems, some of the education systems. And in parts of the supply chain as well, this is happening too. Workers are standing up for themselves and they're saying, no, we're not going to be treated like this. We're not going to be lied to and forced to take a dangerous injection that doesn't actually stop any transmission or whether you get infected with the actual, you know, supposed virus that's supposed to stop. What are you giving this to people for? It's nonsense. And, you know, they've really hit their limit. You know, we're not going to go along to get along in this garbage anymore, period. So when this happens and you have a partial system collapses within these institutions and with everything that comes with it, and again, we're a country of 330 million people, so these are going to be aggregations and what was prior a functional system that allowed X to get to Y and for you to get that and for them to go here and all that sort of thing. There's going to be spots where there's breaks in that. Now, on the level of someone who's involved in those industries, who is in that system, let's say in the supply chain, where there's a break in it, and also at the level of just being a citizen noticing that there's something amiss, the way to approach taking care of that is not necessarily always to appeal to a higher authority. So if you're, your first, let's look at the example of the electrical system first. And let's say you got a house and the electricity goes out. And you're like, oh, okay, well, what happened? All right, can you call the electric company and find out what the issue is? Okay, you can call the electric company. You call them and their hotline and you say, hey, my electricity's out. What do I do? What happened? Is it coming back on? And if they say, oh, yeah, well, oh, it's just for a little bit, just for a few hours. We'll get it back up. We had a pole that fell down that broke or blown by the wind or... there was a bad lightning strike near a transformer, and it'll be back on in a few hours. Okay, great. So in that case, you appeal to that authority. They said it'll be fixed in a couple hours. You're good to go. A couple hours go by, electricity comes back on, you're fine. Okay. Now, in the situation where you call that hotline and they say, oh, well, we don't know what happened, so we don't know how long it's going to be. We'll just have to find out at some point. They might, in some situations, that might come up. In such a situation, you can wait. You can wait it out, or you can go yourself and check those lines and to see if something went down. Perhaps they don't have enough workers that day to keep an eye on the electrical lines in that particular part of your town or the country or the city. Maybe no one's looking at it. Maybe they need some extra eyes out there to see where a break in the line is and what happened. So you can go out there and you can investigate and be like, oh, okay, well, here's where the line is. And then you can call up the electric company and say, hey, look at this. There's a line down at X and Y intersection. So maybe this is where the problem is, and you can utilize your efforts in order to make your electricity get back up and talk directly to that system. Now, in the case that there's some sort of you can't get through on the hotline to the authority, and let's say that the electricity's down for your town or for the city or whatnot. And again, this is a situation that is applicable in just about any industry, or applicable in whatever manner of which in your own life that something is amiss that needs to get fixed. So, considering that, in this case, let's say the electricity goes down for the city, goes down for the town, that sort of deal, and you can't get through the electric company. Okay, what do you do then? You got to take a direct approach to these sorts of things. What do you do then in that case? Go down the lines, check to see if there's something wrong with the lines. You go through all the lines, you find out they're all fine. Well, look at that. Okay. Go to the transformer hub. Is the transformer hub okay? Yes. Appears that it is. You go to the power plant itself. And you're like, okay, what's going on here? Is this puppy running or not? You know, looks like, hey, maybe the thing isn't running. Maybe the shipment of coal they got delayed or something like that. In which case, then you thereby address it. And, you know, take these things one step at a time. Be cool and collected as you do it, calm when it happens. And in such a manner, we can, on an individual level, through this method, one step at a time, address any problems that come up through these systems and institutions collapsing or partially collapsing, such that we put them back together when there is something amiss. So addressing the problem directly is the way to go in these sorts of situations. And let's not get too reliant upon things like digital communication and larger authoritarian structures that are traditionally in charge of such things, because as we're seeing, a lot of our institutions, so much of it, are incredibly corrupt and they're abusing their position. So as we stand up for ourselves, there's necessarily going to be some breaks in these institutions and in these organizations and our organization in getting what's needed to people. So this is the big thing that ultimately is stopping so many people from standing up for themselves, is because they don't want to bite the hand that feeds them, so to speak. We don't want to do that. The hand that has been feeding us is this system that we've put together such that there are people in higher positions that issue instructions and we follow along with them for whatever reward necessary. So when you bite that hand, that's that system that we're worried about, breaking, that we shove off our principles a little bit in order to follow through on, because we want that food, we want that water. We've got to have that that electricity, the sanitation. We've got to have these things, infrastructure, buildings, all that. But the fact that we do has been used against us on this front. The implied threat is that you treat your other people, treat people in your life like garbage, and you follow through with these nonsensical orders, and then we'll get the things to you that you actually want. And we won't throw you out on the street and that sort of thing to throw you in the gutter. But biting the hand that feeds us is pretty vital in this case where we are now. And that's continually happening. So again, there's a lot of great news on all fronts on this. And better believe that not all of it is hitting the newspapers or coming to light on a regular basis. As this is digital platforms have been quite highly controlled for a very, very long time. And So don't necessarily expect that when it all gets fixed, it's going to be plastered on the front of the New York Times or on the Yahoo News board or MSN or some such thing. Although, you know, it might at the same time. They say the revolution will not be televised, but when television and digital communication is part of the revolution, then it will be. Because when the revolution involves that explicitly, it involves taking care, addressing the corruption and abuse and the lying and the deception of these very structures, of these very technologies, these communication methods and devices that go out to so many of us. That's when the revolution actually does get televised, because the television is the revolution. That's coming along. So don't expect it necessarily, but by the end of it all, it'll be quite evident that that the shifts and changes have come. So in the meanwhile, when there are problems, it's important to address them directly and take a step-by-step approach to get to it. Let's say in your apartment complex, the water gets shut off. Okay, find out who's in charge here. Where's the super? Okay, they're gone. I don't know. Where's the water at? Go to it. If there's someone who isn't, you can't get a hold of repairmen or something like that, then bring together a group of folks who are collectively affected by this problem, and then you got to talk to each other, put someone in charge of fixing it, and go and taking care of that business. This is also pertinent for a shift in the economy when it happens, as a new economic outlines. So there's going to be a lot of, as there already is, kind of a lot of diciness in the meanwhile, where something will go wrong. How do we fix this? And it's necessary to get to the basic ground level of it, and be like, okay, well, we need, there's a leak in this pipe. How do we fix it? We need a certain amount of cement, or we need a replacement pipe. Okay, how do we get that replacement pipe? You have to have it fabricated. Okay, where's the nearest place you can fabricate this sort of thing? And you basically just got to go like that until you find what's necessary. Also, keep in mind that so much of what we use as products and replacement parts, again, come from China. And China appears to be willing to shut down its exports in order to force concessions from its trade partners. So this is a bit of that bite the hand that feeds you type thing that could be of issue. Because if we have that what they call trade deficit with another country, particularly with them, they have incredible amounts of leverage in order to affect whatever they would like to do, what they would like that other country to do. In our case, or in the case of just about any other country in which China has made themselves such a manufacturing powerhouse and a creator of products that if they cut off their exports, the shelves will be empty. That is a very strong bargaining position. Now, if they nonetheless try to utilize that as a bargaining position, it's important to stand firm and to call them on their bluff. And when there is issues, when there are issues that come as a result of that, that utilize a direct approach in order to create what is missing, what we have a dearth of in that case. Not only will you end up, giving them the big double middle finger and feel pretty dang good about it, but also in that process, we will create, bring back that manufacturing, that local manufacturing prowess that ideally every country should have for themselves to provide the basics for their own people. This is something that when you look at what the Soviet Union did, they had areas in which there was a city dedicated to making steel, and there was a city dedicated to making concrete, and there was a city dedicated to doing this and to doing that and to doing this and doing that. And in such a manner, when you have control over all of them, and you have this system of which there needs to be, you have to have a centralized, what this does is it forces a necessity to have a centralized authority that can send out this product to everyone else, and from one city send out that product to everyone else, and from another city send out their product to everyone else. So if you don't have that's how that centralized authority ensures, not necessarily ensures, because it doesn't always work, but that is one of the manners in which these sort of gross and abusive organizational structures that we sometimes make for ourselves as human beings, crafting these abusive governments, that's one of the ways that centralized authority makes sure that it's in a position where it's less likely to be toppled or just ignored, is that they're in a position where they have connections to all these different places. So by making sure that basics, in this case when it comes to China, that so many of the basic products are made in that one country, that one country, not only for it, but also for the centralized authority that has connections amongst the producers and the importers and the consumers who actually take in the product, they ensure their position that much stronger by having being the only real networking that goes from, you know, point A to point B, D, C, D, E, F, G, you know, all down the line, the whole alphabet. So that's something that's being utilized against us. But at the same time, calling that bluff is vital. Because if we don't call that bluff now, I mean, when are you gonna do it? It's just gonna get worse and worse and worse, more and more centralized, and there's going to be further and further abuse that this system will rot upon the people, whoever it wants to, and eventually it's just going to be everybody, and that's where this winds up. Everyone becomes equal, but they're all equally poor and treated like garbage, and is given, you know, bare rations here or there. Because that's what abusive systems do. They want you in positions of desperation, such that they can just take advantage of you. And at the bottom, and at the basic level for this, it's command and control. It's because those in those abusive positions, they get off by having control of you. That's on a personal psychological level. That's what is going on here. I mean, these people are sociopaths, or psychopaths. Those at the who are accepting, who are running with this sort of abusive position. Now, at the same time, there's also the sort of societal sway that pushes toward that level, and that is best utilized by the example of accepting a little bit of deception here and going forward with it. Accepting that in order to make some money, you're going to have to drop some of your principles. you're going to have to set them to the side for a day or two, and then, you know, go on with your life, and then eventually, hopefully, get what you want. That, when you take that on a individual and personal basis, how many people just do that a little bit here or there, when needed, in order to advance a little bit higher up the ladder, and you take that in the aggregate, and what, and then you look at where that in the aggregate ultimately leads, what you find is it creates a societal tendency that will lead itself to abuse. Because even if at that top level you're not necessarily the sort of person who would abuse other people, let's say you're not a person who would do that. Let's say at the age of you finished up high school and you started off in the workforce and you climbed up that corporate ladder over the course of 20 years, and eventually by the top of it you got into a position. And you could do, you don't have to abuse your, or you don't have to, you know, have some sort of, again, sometimes using abuse in this case is a strong word, but at the same time, it's in a lot of cases it's accurate. But you don't need to shove aside your principles. If you're in a top position, whether it's in a company or whether it's in the Department of Government or anything else, some position of authority, there's no necessity that you shove aside principles. If in order to get to that position, you had to push aside your principles one time after another, after another, after another, after another, it becomes a learned approach. And you'd be conditioned to it by the time you get up there, such that you don't even necessarily look at the world and see people like you did back when you were a much more of a, let's say, open heart and little more innocent and kind to people around you when you were younger. So it's important to recognize that can happen through one's life, and this is also an important example in why it is that the means to an end doesn't work. If even if you have the greatest intentions by the end of it, if you have to employ shoddy, unscrupulous means in order to get to that end, then that end is going to be tainted in the effort of doing that. Because really, when you look at life, there is no end. There is no end. It's a continual journey that we're all going through. I mean, the end is when you die. that's really it. You cannot really draw a hard line between what is an effort to get to somewhere and that somewhere. It's always rolls along like this. It's that ever-present present. It is the ever-present now, the continual flow that will always be there, and that such that the means to the end can really only be the means, because at that end it's means again, because we're constantly doing things. We have to continually do things. I mean, you lay down eventually, that's, you know, at the end of the day, during sleep, sure. But this is why it's so vital that when you have good intentions, that those good intentions they're not meant to be something that you operate on at some future date. You have to do it, you know, all the time. That the end is the means, ultimately. And hopefully we can understand that now. And I think we might leave it at that for the time being. This has been the Maverick Radio Hour, November 3rd, 2021, coming to you from Westport, Kansas City, Missouri. My name is GT Maverick, and I'm wishing you peace, love, harmony, justice, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.